Good morning and good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webcast, Why Your Marketing Strategy Needs Heroes to Reach and Engage Customers, sponsored by Sitecore. The AMA provides you with this webcast as one of the many special programs we offer to the marketing community. We invite you to participate in this ongoing series of free web seminars to help you drive the greatest return on your marketing investments. Whether it's in research, advertising, promotion, social media, and beyond, our webcasts offer education in all key areas of marketing. So make sure to join us every week for our informative thought leader webcast featuring some of the most expert minds in marketing. Just go to marketingpower.com/webcast for more information and enrollment. While you're visiting our site, we also invite you to register. By doing so, you'll connect with the largest community of marketing professionals in North America. Be able to manage your email preferences, enjoy access to closed content, and more. You can do so by going to marketingpower.com/join or jointheama.com. Before we get started today, let's cover a few of the housekeeping items. This webcast is being recorded, and both the recording and slides will be made available via email. If you have technical or content-related questions at any time during the presentation, please feel free to submit them using the chat box that's on the left-hand side of your screen. And we invite you to continue this conversation on Twitter by adding or searching for hashtag SiteCoreHeroes. With that, it's my pleasure to introduce our moderator for today, Eric Mott, VP Community at Sitecore. Eric?
Thank you, Jennifer, and welcome, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. If you're a marketer or support marketers in an operations or technology role, we have an outstanding webinar and presenter for you today. I think this topic is very timely when you consider two significant realities. The first, growth of social media, mobile computing, digital communications in general is undeniable. Your customers and prospects certainly have more power and influence today, and this is a good thing to embrace, and there's no turning back. Our second reality is we really do need heroes in every organization to help local communities and the economy at large to innovate, to create value like never before. I know you see the news every day, and it's rough out there. The federal deficit is out of control. Financial markets are difficult to figure out. High unemployment. And closer to home, how about that 401k and home equity value? I don't know about you, but my personal investments took a hit these past 2 years. The good news is there are significant opportunities for creative marketers like us to make a difference, to hone in on new and valuable skills that serve and delight empowered customers and prospects, of course, and give you a competitive advantage and solid career path in your marketplace. And if you manage people, consider hiring heroes. There's a lot of talent out there that can help your customers and your organization, regardless of where they live and work. And as Jen mentioned earlier, we're on Twitter, so if you'd like to connect with us and chat with the Sitecore Heroes hashtag, that'd be wonderful. So before I introduce Josh, I'd like to briefly share with you some information about Sitecore. We've been in business for more than 10 years. We're a multinational company with staff all over the world, and our headquarters is located in Copenhagen, Denmark. I, along with other members of the team, are based here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we're working, of course, collaboratively every day with our team members. Simply put, Sitecore redefines how organizations engage with their customers, powering digital experiences that can sense and adapt to customers' needs to increase revenue, lifetime value, and satisfaction. Sitecore software makes it easy for organizations to identify, serve, engage, and convert new customers via web, email, social, mobile, search, and e-commerce channels. For more information about what we do, please visit Sitecore.net. We're very happy to be collaborating with some of the most successful organizations in the world, including executive, marketing, and technology teams. You know, here's just a handful of thousands of customers in B2B, B2C, government, education, and nonprofit sectors that we have the pleasure of serving. We work with a wide range of partners, too, including web developers, interactive agencies, email service providers, and systems integrators. These are the folks that are working behind the scenes to bring it all together. So with that, I'd like to introduce you to Josh Burnoff. Josh is the Senior Vice President of Idea Development at Forrester Research and is the co-author of two best-selling books, Groundswell and Empowered, and I've read them both, and they're great books. With that, I hand it off to Josh.
Thanks very much, Eric, and I'm really pleased to be able to talk to all the people on the call today. For the last few years since Groundswell was originally published, I've been talking to marketers within companies large and small and other kinds of organizations about the challenges they face in rolling out social media and social media marketing applications. And what I began to recognize was that the challenge was not just in knowing what to do, but in how to manage your company in an age in which your customers are as empowered as they can possibly be. That's the idea behind our book, Empowered, and that's really what I'm going to talk about today, about how to do marketing and how to do management in this world of empowered customers. And I'm going to start with the story of one particular empowered customer. Her name is Heather Armstrong. You see her here with her husband. And she may be known to some of you because she has a very popular blog called Deuce. And on this blog, she talks about parenting issues, has a rabid following, people who just love her. And when the time came for her second child to be born, that's her child Margot there, and proof that I'm not beyond using a baby picture to make you love me. Anyway, when the time came for her second child to be born, she knew what we all know who have children, what happens when you have a baby, which is you have lots and lots and lots of laundry. So she bought the top-of-the-line Maytag washing machine, Maytag, the dependability people. Well, what happened next is a pretty good illustration of what can happen when people are connected in social media. The washing machine failed. She called the repair people. They came. They said, we need to get more parts for it. They came back a week later. They didn't have the right parts. A week after that, they came back with different parts. They still weren't the right parts. There's a very vivid description on this blog of what it smelled like for all the diapers to be piling up while this machine wasn't working. And I'll read to you a little bit of what she said on her blog about this experience. After all this happened, she says, so I call Maytag, the Maytag, the mothership, and the agent I get after working through a five-minute maze of press this and say this and please hold is the snootiest customer service person I have ever talked to in my life. And skipping to the end here, she says, okay then, I say, almost begging at this point, almost to the point of tears, is there anyone I can talk to who might see what I've been through and understand? And here's where I say, do you know what Twitter is? Because I have over 1 million followers on Twitter. If I say something about my terrible experience on Twitter, do you think someone will help me? And she says, meaning the customer service rep says, in the most condescending tone and hiss ever uttered, yes, I know what Twitter is, and no, that will not matter. Now, this is what we call in this business a career-limiting move, because the next thing that happens is that this tweet goes out to her 1 million Twitter followers. So that you do not have to suffer like we have. Do not ever buy a Maytag. I repeat, our Maytag experience has been a nightmare, and this is followed by a bunch of other tweets in the same vein. And remember, the people who are looking at this are not just 1 million people that happen to know Deuce, but they're the kind of people who believe everything she says. The damage to Maytag's reputation for dependability is hard to calculate, but you can see why in a situation like this an empowered customer has so much of an impact. But it doesn't have to be that way. In fact, I'd like to show you another example. It starts much the same way, but ends very differently. The guy in the upper left of this slide is a guy named Josh Corin, and he bought an iPhone at Best Buy. And he also bought an insurance program to go with the iPhone just in case anything went wrong. Well, much as in the Maytag case, something did go wrong, the iPhone stopped working, and he brought it into Best Buy and said, hey, you got to replace this because I have the insurance program. And they said, okay, we'll replace it. Here's a brand new BlackBerry to replace your iPhone. This was not what Josh was looking for. So at this point, he started twittering about how disappointed he was. But the difference here is that Best Buy has what you see here, 12 Force, the Twitter help force, over 2,000 Best Buy employees who are actually out there listening to Twitter and responding to requests that come in across Twitter. And one of those employees actually responded. Her name was Coral Beagler. And as a result of that, she said, let me look into your case. She's in customer service. She looked him up. She said, oh, you shouldn't be getting a BlackBerry. You deserve a new iPhone. She got the manager of a local store to make an iPhone available to him. And then by the next day, he was tweeting about how great Best Buy was and what good customer service they had. Now, this is not really a story about customer service. It's a story about management. The four people who you see on this slide are four people who are involved in the creation of 12 Force. Coral Beagler, the woman on the left, is the one who answered Josh Korn's problem. But she could not have done what she did unless she had the innovation of the second guy. His name is Ben Hetherington. And Ben is the guy who invented the system that makes it possible for thousands of Best Buy employees to use Twitter on the same handle. Ben showed this to the management there, and they said, you know, this could be really good. And they handed over the job of rolling it out to the third person you see there. His name is John Bernier, and he had to deal with things like training and labor laws to turn Ben's idea into an actual workable system. And the reason that Coral and Ben and John could do what they did is because of Barry Judge, the guy you see on the right there. He is the CMO of Best Buy, and he recognizes that these ideas of how to reach out to customers using social and other technologies are ideas that can come from anywhere within the organization. And when somebody in his marketing organization comes up with an idea, even if it is, as he puts it, a half-baked idea, he is still likely to try and help and support it to the point where it can actually help the business, because that's how Best Buy runs. The lesson of all of this is pretty simple. The lesson is that in this world of empowered consumers, only an empowered worker can serve an empowered customer. It's empowered workers like John Bernier and Ben Hetherington and Coral Beagler that make things different at Best Buy. And the lesson of Empower the Book is that you need to find ways to empower those people within your organization that come up with these ideas to actually let those ideas turn into reality. And that's necessary because at the speed that empowered consumers move right now, empowered customers in B2B as well, the speed at which empowered customers move, only your own staff can move at that speed that's necessary to serve them. A top-down way of running all the technology projects is not going to succeed anymore. So I'm going to talk about five things here, each of them relatively briefly. Who are the heroes in your organization? I'll define what we mean by a hero. Second, how can these heroes actually reach out to customers? Why is it important? What do they do? Which projects that they come up with should be supported, because we're not advocating chaos. You have to be careful about which things you go forward with and which you don't. What management framework makes heroes successful in the companies we've seen that support them? How are they organized? And finally, how does this relate to your site? And you'll see how the website, despite all of these imaginative applications, the website is still at the center of all of this interaction. So let's start with this first piece, who are the heroes in your organization? Now, HERO is actually an acronym. A hero in the description in the book Empowered is a highly empowered and resourceful operative. And yes, this is proof that I will go to any length to stretch an acronym to fit an idea. But the reason this is here is because as I spoke to people within organizations that do all sorts of social applications and mobile applications and other innovative applications, I again and again was struck by just how innovative they are, how creative they are, and also at the challenges they had to face to go from their idea to actually implementing it. These are some of the heroes that you're going to hear about today. Their pictures are here. And I'll describe actually some of the activity that heroes do. Let me give you a couple of examples right now, and you'll see that this can come from anywhere. For example, this guy in the upper left is Leonard Bonacci. And Leonard Bonacci is in charge of stadium security for the Philadelphia Eagles football team. So every home game that the Philadelphia Eagles have, 68,000 fans will come to this stadium, and Leonard has 24 security people to deal with the issues created by 68,000 fans. That's a challenge. So when a company called Guest Assist came to Leonard, he saw that they had the potential solution to his problem. They have a system that allows you to send a text message to a short code, and that text message then appears on a console that Leonard and his people can see. So now that he's gone and gotten permission and implemented this throughout the stadium, any fan anywhere in the Philadelphia Eagles stadium can ask for help with the text code. Some of them text things like, somebody has spilled soda on my seat, and then they'll send someone over to clean it up. Sometimes it's a text message like, help, the person in front of me is having a heart attack. and they can rapidly get medical staff there to assist the person. Occasionally, they get a text message that says something like, "Help, the offense has been stolen." And then they just text back and say, "Please use this for important challenges and emergencies." And the person realizes that we know your phone number and perhaps stops with the extraneous text messages. But what's happened here is that because of the creativity of Leonard Bonacci and Guest Assist, 68,000 people in the stadium are now his helpers in finding and solving the problems that his security people need to solve. Now, that is a customer-facing application. It's a customer service application. Now, let's take a look at another application, which is an internal application. This is Rob Sharp, and he is in charge of training, sales training, at Black & Decker. Now, there are hundreds and hundreds of sales reps at Black & Decker whose job is to go call on hardware stores and explain the products. And what he figured out was that these salespeople, who are typically learning through PowerPoint classes in their facility in Baltimore, he figured out that they were visual learners. And as a result, he did a pilot project in which he gave the salespeople coming through the training flip video cameras and said, "Hey, why don't you make videos about what you're learning?" He also created what you see here, an internal YouTube for sharing video. And this YouTube started to fill up with videos from the salespeople of things like why our reciprocating saw is better, and here's what the competition does that's not as good, or here's what happens when you deal with the return process at a Home Depot store. This has revolutionized the sales training at Black & Decker because they used to have people in for several weeks. They've reduced that to just one day as a result of people who are taking the sales training looking at this video ahead of time. And interestingly, the IT department, which told him that they were going to have a challenge getting the server available to do this, but finally give in, now the IT department has embraced this and they put up their own videos about things like how to configure your smartphone. Now, this hero idea can actually be quantified. We do a lot of surveys here at Forrester Research, and what you see here is from a survey that we did in Q4 of 2009, in which we looked at information workers within American companies, over 4,000 of them, and we asked them if they feel empowered, that is, if they feel like they actually have permission to come up with new ideas, and if they can act in a resourceful way, that is, whether they are permitted to use technologies on their computers which may not be sanctioned by the IT department. As you can see here, in the lower left, about 34% of the employees, information workers, felt neither empowered nor resourceful. The lockdown employees, another 34%, were feeling empowered but were not permitted to actually use these new technologies, and as a result, they couldn't get much done. 13% were in the group we call rogue employees. These are people who act resourcefully with technology even though they're not necessarily doing it in a way that's empowering them to solve customer problems. And about 20%, about 2 in 10 information workers, are actually both empowered and resourceful, and this is where the people like Leonard Bonacci and Rob Sharp actually come in creating these new applications. Now, we have a lot of data like this. I'd like to show you just one that relates specifically to marketers. When we looked at marketing and sales employees, and then this is specifically non-retail sales employees, so people who don't work at a cash register, you can see that they are significantly more likely, almost twice as likely, to be in that hero quadrant as the average information worker. So already we've proven that there are a lot of empowered, resourceful people in marketing and sales. I have this for all different industries and all different job classifications, and one of the things I can tell you that we found very interesting is that the least empowered and resourceful employees, the ones with the least percentage of heroes, were actually the people in customer service. And when you consider that they're the ones that are talking to your customers all the time, you might want to realize that there's a necessity to have a change there. Okay, let's go on to the second part here. How do heroes reach out to customers? What do they actually do? Well, the first thing you need to understand is that in this world, the funnel doesn't end with customers anymore. So we're all used to the marketing funnel starting with eyeballs and going through awareness, consideration, preference, and purchase to generate customers. And we think that our job is done once we've created a customer. But in fact, these customers talk. People like Josh Corin, Best Buy, people like Heather Armstrong, the Maytag customer, they are talking about whether your products are any good and whether your service is any good, and this is influencing other people. And that's why we recommend when you think about the funnel now, you also think about what happens after you have a customer. That customer must be supported and empowered and delighted. If they become a fan and start broadcasting how great your company is, like Josh Corin did when Best Buy served him well, they create influence and, in fact, generate influence impressions that then influence your other customers. And, in fact, in a statistic you may have seen, we estimate that people generate 500 billion instances of influencing one customer influencing another within a social environment every year in the United States. So what can you do when people are creating this level of influence? Well, this is the things that these heroes can actually do. And we've got an acronym for this. It's IDEA. And it's four steps that you can use to treat your customers as a channel. The four steps are, one, I, identify your mass influencers. D stands for deliver groundswell customer service, like you saw at Best Buy. E is empower with mobile information, and A is amplify fan activity. So I'm going to show you some examples of heroes that actually created applications that do each of these things. So let's start with identify mass influencers. The mass influencers are the people who have the most influence among your customer base. And the example we see here comes from the UK, and it's a mobile operator called GifGaff, Vincent Boone, the guy you see in the upper left, the guy who created what you're looking at here, which is an online community. Because this GifGaff mobile service is completely different from any mobile service you've ever heard of before. First of all, they started with this community, and they particularly reached out to people who are the most sophisticated mobile users out there in the UK. And they were all in here talking about what they wanted out of mobile service. So when the time came to actually launch this, they launched a service that was specifically designed for sophisticated, influential mobile users. The reason it's different is this. One, they have no stores. If you want to work with them, you sign up online, and then you get a SIM card in the mail, which you have to put into your own phone. That's another thing they don't have. They don't have phones. You need to bring your own phone. And you might say that's a little challenging, but of course these are the sophisticated mobile users, so they have no trouble with that. And if they have a problem, they don't call the call center because GifGaff has no call center. Instead, they ask a question on this online community, and 95% of the time that question gets answered by another member of the community. So no phones, no stores, no call center, much lower costs. And as a result, the word of mouth about this is spreading like wildfire, and there are thousands and thousands of customers now in just a few short months since this service actually launched. Okay, let's go on to the D, deliver groundswell customer service. And here I'd like to introduce you to two people that I know and have worked with personally, because this is an example from my own personal life. This is Suzanne Pittick and her son Kevin, who runs their website, and they run a site called rentvillas.com. If you're interested in going to Europe and renting a house instead of staying in a hotel room, then you can go there, and they deliver excellent service, a lot of hand-holding. They send you a booklet about the place you're going to go. And then when you come back, you get an email that says, hey, why don't you go to our site and tell us about your experience and rate it. So I did that. And then the next thing I got was this email that you see here that said, I have just read your review, and it mentioned some of the specific things that I put in my review. And then it said, why don't you go over to this public website and put your review there as well. Now, I thought about it, and I thought, they can't possibly be sending this email to everybody who signs up, but in fact, they are. They are sending out a couple of hundred of these emails every week in an attempt to get people to talk about their experiences online. And I thought this is amazing because, you know, I'm not rich. It's not like I'm going to go rent a house in Europe every year. I won't be another customer for a while. But this is not about customer loyalty. It's about taking me and what I know as a customer, delivering excellent service to me, and then giving me the opportunity to talk about it. And that's an example of groundswell customer service that generates effective word of mouth. All right, now let's go on to the E in IDEA, Empower with Mobile Information. And this example, again, comes from the UK. It's one of the most amazing mobile applications I've ever seen. This is autotrader.co.uk. Now, in the UK, AutoTrader works pretty much the way it does here in the United States. It connects up buyers and sellers of used cars. But what AutoTrader recognized was that one of the biggest challenges is that people don't know what kind of car they want to buy. So they said, let's help people figure that out. Working with Sapient Nitro, they created this mobile application, and here's how it works. You point your iPhone at a car. You take a picture of the number plate. It then uses optical character recognition to identify the numbers, and then it passes that off to a public server, because in the UK there is a public server which, given the number plate, will tell you the make and model of the car. It then comes back and tells you what you're looking at. Okay, so in this case, we're looking at a Lexus RX. You say, oh yeah, that's what I want, a Lexus RX. You then push another button on the application, and it shows you all of the Lexus RXs that are for sale near you from other people, along with photos and the price. You can say, oh, I see one here that looks pretty good. And again, people forget that iPhones can also make phone calls. It then will connect you up on the telephone. You call the person, and you can actually arrange to see or even buy the car. This, in 2 weeks, became the number one most popular iPhone application in the UK, and people who got it used it an average of 6 times on the first day that they got it, all because they had figured out how to use the power of mobile to actually connect the buyers and sellers that were using autotrader.co.uk. Finally, I want to talk about the A here, amplifying fan activity. And in this case, the example comes from Ford, which you may know is Ad Age's Marketer of the Year. And the person you see here, the hero in this case, is Scott Monty, who is in charge of social media for Ford. He helped to conceive the program that you see here to launch the new Ford Fiesta. The Fiesta was a very popular car in Europe, but very few people knew about it in the United States at the time of this launch, and so Scott's problem was, how am I going to get people to hear about this car, because it's very popular in Europe, and we think it'll be popular here as well. So he recruited 100 people who were very well connected in social media. He called them the agents. You see a website here of their activity. So he got these 100 people and said, you know, here's the deal. We will loan you a Ford Fiesta for 6 months, and all you have to do is communicate on social media about your experiences with it. Sure enough, these 100 people started to write about what they were doing with their Ford Fiestas. They made videos. They tweeted. They posted photos on Flickr, and they reached a lot of people. In fact, their videos were looked at 7 million times in total, and their Twitter reach was about 4 million in total. This made a huge difference. Over 100,000 people heard about it and came to this website to learn more about the Fiesta, and over 10,000 people actually pre-ordered the car before it was available in the United States. A huge number of pre-orders for a new car, all driven by the way that Scott had amplified the word of mouth of these folks. So those are the ways that heroes actually tap into the power of customers as a marketing channel. You might ask in your own company, which projects should be supported? How do I know if someone comes up with an idea, is it worth doing? And we've got a framework in the book that actually helps with that, so you can avoid the chaos that might come from letting anybody do just about anything they want. Here's the basis of this. And that is to assess and compare the effort required and the value generated. So you go back to the hero if you're their boss and say, you know, you have some questions to answer. On the effort side, you really need to look at what tools you might need, how much time is it going to take in weeks or months, is there a budget, what sort of people are going to be affected, is this just something you can do yourself or something that you're going to need to recruit a bunch of other people to help out with. And you need to worry about the particular areas within the organization that tend to say no, areas like legal, accounting, public relations, IT, and so on, and figure out who you're going to need to get on your side there. On the value side, we actually recommend a fairly disciplined approach to where the value comes from in these applications. Are you generating revenue? Are you saving money? Or do you have a way to increase productivity? That's what happened in the application that you saw, YouTube for Black & Decker. Is this generating word of mouth, like some of the examples we just saw, or is it generating a higher degree of awareness and reaching more people? So if you compare the effort and the value, you can actually determine whether it's worth doing. And the results are shown on this chart on the left. If the value is way more than the effort, the project's a no-brainer. If the effort's way more than the value, then you're in what we call a quixotic quagmire, projects to avoid. And then depending on whether it's low effort and value, you might be a Class 1 project, which is pretty simple, or a huge project, a Class 4 project that might take months and hundreds of thousands of dollars to implement, has a lot more challenges associated with it. What you see on the right of this slide is our little widget. If you go to forrester.com/empowered tool, you can actually evaluate your own hero project, and that's designed to generate an email that you can share with your boss or others to help them to see what you're working on and to find ways to reduce the effort and increase the value. So I said in the beginning that we were going to talk a little bit about how to manage companies in the age of the empowered customer. This management framework is what we call the Hero Compact. And the Hero Compact has three groups that agree to work together to make heroes successful. The heroes themselves have to operate in a way such that they know what customers need. So we're not talking about people just fooling around with technology. The technology they use has to serve customers, and they have to operate safely, and that's where the other two groups come in. The manager's job is to show the heroes that innovation is a priority and support them, but also to assess the level of effort and the level of risk to determine whether these projects are worth doing. And when it comes time to manage risk, you have to talk to IT. Now, in many companies, IT is known as the department of no, as in, no, you can't use the customer database in that way, or no, it'll generate a security problem if we let people use Twitter. But IT does that because they've been held responsible for anything that happens with technology that goes wrong. In this new world, we have to free them up from all of the responsibility for risk. And in fact, IT's job is to assess the risk and make recommendations, but to leave it to the managers and the heroes to move forward with projects having seen what the risk is. If something does go wrong, it has to be a shared responsibility, not just let's blame IT. So here are some tips. Here are some other things that you have to do to manage a company in the age of the empowered. One is encourage staff to use new technology. We found in the same information worker survey that 8% of information workers were using a smartphone that they purchased or were paying for themselves for work. 12% had downloaded and used an application on a computer that was not sanctioned by their IT department. And 27% were using a login required site that wasn't sanctioned, a site like LinkedIn that they might be using for prospecting or Google Docs for collaboration. Blocking these kinds of activities is pretty counterproductive if you want people to learn how to use new technologies. And in fact, it doesn't work, or as we say, resistance is futile. There's no point in blocking these technologies. Instead, you have to train people to use them appropriately because then they can tap into the creative energy they've got around new ways to use technology to reach out to customers. It's also important to talk to them properly. And looking at leaders who actually encourage heroes successfully, here are some quotes. Scott Cook, the founder of Intuit, said we have a high tolerance for experiments. And he specifically cited this test: how hard is it to get a project that costs $5,000 done at your company? The answer is it's easy, then you're on the right track. If the answer is it takes three levels of management to approve, then I think you understand where the innovation is not happening. Barry Judge, as I said we're nearly always in a half-baked mode. Half-baked ideas allow people to give you feedback. And Manish Mehta, who you'll meet in just a minute, points out that as a social pioneer, you need to learn how to take the arrows and risks and move fast. Experiment. These are the attitudes of management that is encouraging these sorts of applications. You can actually find heroes within your company by creating tools that they can use to connect with one another. For example, at the insurance company Chubb, they generated a contest through their intranet using some software called Imaginatic. They generated an innovation contest so people could route ideas around. The guy you see on the left there is John Bidwell. He is the VP of Innovation, Chief Innovation Officer at Chubb, and you can imagine how much fun it is to be in charge of innovation at a huge insurance company. But by using this kind of a program, he surfaced ideas like ones from the guy you see on the right here. That guy is Frank Goodsmith, and he actually generated an idea after 21 years as an underwriter, a better way to serve life sciences companies, which ended up getting implemented. This project, this innovation contest, generated 600 ideas. They narrowed it down to the 24 best. Those 24 people came in and presented to an internal team, like as if it were a venture capitalist. Four of those ideas were selected and implemented, and Frank's was one of those four. And this is so successful that every month or two, they continue to do another innovation contest at Chubb in an attempt to keep this large multinational insurance company innovating. The other thing that people need is ways to connect with one another, heroes within the company. And this is what Manish Mehta did at Dell. This map that you see here, he showed us in 2009, this is the over 100 social applications that are taking place all around Dell. You can imagine the sort of chaos that's created. IdeaStorm is one where people can suggest ideas for new Dell computers. And Dell Outlet is another. It's a Twitter feed that actually has sold $7 million worth of refurbished and overstocked computers. Manish's problem is that he's got people all over the world doing this stuff, and he wants them to do it in a way so that they can learn from one another. So every week, he takes the senior people who are involved from all the different departments, from HR, from customer service, from sales, from marketing, and he actually gets them together to talk about the applications they're doing and get them learning from one another. This council that connects people for best practices is an effective way to manage in a world where you have heroes happening all over the corporation. So the last thing I'm going to get to is to talk about how these applications relate to your site. As you can imagine, there's an enormous amount of splintering now of all of the activity associated with companies. In fact, this is what we at Forrester call the SplinterNet. Splinters that are not part of the open web that people are using, things like Facebook and Twitter that require a login to see, things like the App Store or apps on either Android or Apple that are taking place in environments while they're interactive, are not part of the open web. And then you have communities like Lithium and Jive, both internally and externally, blogs, videos. How does this stuff all relate to your central website? Well, it relates in a very direct way. The website actually powers all of this other stuff. The content, the links, the RSS feeds coming off of your website are often very important elements in things like Facebook pages and apps. And, of course, to see how this stuff is working, you want to have opportunities from within these apps and pages to send people back to parts of the website where you can monitor the traffic and see whether that's effective. And this is when you get to the analytics on the website, which now have to look at these other activities and help you to determine the value of those activities. This way, the things that heroes do, even though they create sometimes splintered pieces of the net, can still be tied back to corporate goals and can still be connected to value to prove that they're worth doing. So, let me give you some thoughts to take away before we finish here today. One, I showed that only an empowered worker can serve an empowered customer. These heroes within your company, these empowered workers, can turn your customers into a marketing channel, just as you saw at places like Rent Villas and places like Ford. If you're going to have a hero project, you want to make sure you match the effort with the value. Remember the tool at forrester.com/empoweredtool to check that. Remember the Hero Compact as a way of managing things. Management and IT need to support the heroes, and the heroes need to work on behalf of customers. And in the age of the splinternet, your website still remains the central element that all of this information passes through when you evaluate how effective it is. I hope it's been useful to you. At this point, I'd be happy to take some questions, so I'm going to turn things back over to Eric to manage that portion. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, thank you, Josh. Really appreciate it. The presentation was awesome, and the case studies were just fantastic. And it's raining heavily here in San Francisco, and on Twitter we had a ton of great comments, so thank you folks out there discussing this. Let's go ahead and get into some questions here, but before we do that, you know, again, let's continue the conversation on Twitter. And I have a couple of suggestions for you, and like I said earlier at the top of the call, webinar, you know, I've read both books, Groundswell and Empower. They're great books. They're very timely. So I highly encourage you to go and pick up a copy. Also, consider tapping into Sitecore's best practice blogs and the heroes behind it. We have a number of blogs covering 15 topics. And, you know, if you are already a hero and you're blogging about interesting and relevant topics between web and email and social and mobile and e-commerce, there's a submission form there where you can become a contributor. There's no cost. We like to help get the word out of experts and heroes, and we're happy to do that. So take a look at that, and actually the link there, you can see it, but if you just go to the Sitecore.net website on the Community tab, there is the best practice blogs there. So with that, I'm going to get into some questions. We've got about 15 minutes. We've got a lot of questions coming in. And let me just, I've been jotting them down through what's been coming in here on the chat window. Let's just start with one that's, you know, I think an important question here is, the person commented that they really like your ideas and case studies, Josh, but, you know, the CMO may be a hard sell. You know, whoa, just had some thunder here. Hope I'm still online.
Yeah.
The question is, you know, how can this person convince his CMO to get on board with this concept, this heroes and this empowered concept in 2011? What are some of the steps that person needs to take?
Well, I want to make it clear here that these applications are all tied directly to business value. So I'm not a big fan of measurements like how many followers you have, but you can sometimes measure things like changes in awareness or changes in customer attitudes, and these are the things that you use to convince the CMO. Another thing, and I mentioned this briefly, and we explore this in a great deal of detail in the book, is the $500 billion number. So, I'm sorry, the 500 billion instances of influence number. So, based on our surveys of consumers, we estimate that people influence other people about products and services within social environments 500 billion times per year. And just for comparison purposes, the total number of impressions created by online, according to Nielsen Online, in that same time period is about 2 trillion. So already, people are creating one quarter as many impressions on one another as all of the impressions created by all the online advertising, and of course, the impressions people create on one another are far more credible.
Mm-hmm.
So with this sort of argumentation, I think you can at least get to a point where you can say, maybe we can take some of the budget we've got dedicated to advertising, which is tough to measure the value of anyway, and move some of it over here into some of these social and mobile applications where we can actually see the activity and measure the value fairly directly.
Mm-hmm. Good thoughts. I'm going to focus in here on a question around an actual case study. You covered Ford. I've actually talked with Scott Monty.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of really great things over at Ford. This person asked if there was any kind of filtering that took place through the Fiesta movement. In other words, filtering out negative comments. I'm not sure if you know that or not, but what's your thinking on whether people should filter the negative stuff or should it just all go out, positive, negative, neutral?
Well, I think that there's an opportunity to filter in some locations, but you need to understand that once you unleash people, they don't necessarily stay in the environment that you put them in. So these people in the Fiesta movement, if they were driving their Fiesta and they started to have a problem with it, they were probably going to be talking about it. And since they have their own Twitter followers and their own people who follow them on YouTube, it's not as if Ford could just shut that down or turn it off somehow. this is why it's important, really, to do this in environments in which people are going to say things that are more positive. Now, to give you another example of that nature, when Microsoft released Windows 7, they started to identify that there were a lot of people who were saying positive things about Windows and really didn't want to be pegged in this, you know, I'm a PC, I'm a Macintosh kind of way of doing things. They were getting useful stuff done. So they created a site called windows.com/social, which included a lot of commentary from people who were talking about Windows 7. Now, that is a moderated feed. If you go in there and say, Windows 7 is terrible, I hate it, that's not going to appear in that feed. But I want to be clear, if you go and search about Windows 7 in the general web, you're still going to see people saying negative things, and there's absolutely nothing a company can do about that.
Mm-hmm. I got a question here that came in where basically someone's saying, you know, some of this could be risky. Being a hero could be taking risks, especially if it's in the wrong environment. Let's say like, the environment is risk adverse. Mm-hmm. Do you have any, you know, aside from kind of building the business case, and there's lots of ways to do that,
yeah.
Do you have any examples where heroes have, you know, increased their career opportunities, have increased their income because they have taken risks and those have been embraced? Any kind of, you know, benchmarks around what's the opportunity for heroes that are taking some risks?
Well, I want to say two things about that. The first one that relates to risk is this. You cannot just be a sort of loose cannon with this stuff because companies have reasons that they don't just let people do whatever they want. And, for example, if you're going to be influencing what people say in public, your PR department will become involved. If you work for a pharmaceutical company, you had better get the regulatory affairs people involved because you can't just create a word-of-mouth application for pharmaceuticals without a whole lot of care that's being paid to FDA regulations. And I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars worth of risk here if you get caught doing something you're not supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the first step is to get the naysayers to actually be part of your launch so that you get their concerns and address them before the thing goes live. As opposed to just getting yourself in trouble and saying, oh, I had no idea I had to obey this regulation. The other thing I'll say that relates to your question is that almost every person who I have talked to who's done one of these successful hero applications has risen in importance and prestige in their own company. Mm-hmm. You have people like Rob Arnold, who created BeingGirl.com at Procter & Gamble. He's now actually mentoring some of the senior executives in what to do about this stuff. Scott Monty's become enormously influential at Ford. Manish Mehta, who was in charge of social customer service, is now risen up to where he's in charge of social technology for the whole of the Dell Corporation and has the ear of the CEO. So these applications, when they succeed, tend to get high degree of visibility. And I would say in most cases where I've talked to people who've done this, it's definitely been very helpful for their career.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned earlier about getting the right people involved and getting commitments. Another question here is, you know, who in the organization writes the new policies that might support heroes? I mean, is it HR? Is it the CMO? Is it CEO? Is it all of them? Does it depend on industry or whatever? Any thoughts on, like, who are the people who are creating the guidance and the policies around these kinds of programs?
Well, that is a shared responsibility. In the case of what is allowed, you know, are people allowed to use Facebook at work? And if they do, what rules do they need to follow? Well, these are important questions. And typically, the Human Resources Department, together with the IT Department, are going to be putting guidelines together about this. Interestingly, at Kodak, which we talk about in the book, it was the CMO who put these policies together, and their policy is actually available, easily searchable online. Not only did they make it available to the employees, they put it actually out there where lots of other companies could get a look at it. But that's only about what's allowed. In order to actually have these applications be successful, that tends to happen as a result of somebody's boss saying, yes, we're going to go forward with it, and creating a high degree of visibility for people who succeed with it. That plus the sharing applications and innovation applications like the one I showed at Chubb are ways to to increase the visibility. And, it just reminds me, you talk to CEOs and they say, why don't my people innovate more? I'm telling them to innovate all the time. Well, you may be telling them that, but if the message they get is that when they come up with a new idea, it's like, we don't do that, here's a whole bunch of approvals you need to get. The person's like, I'm just going to do my job. The best way to communicate that you're open to innovation is to pick a few innovators, support them, and then talk about them a lot. And when the CEO is saying, look at what this guy did, look at what Elaine over here invented, isn't that fantastic? Other people look at that and say, oh, you know what, I can do even better than that. And that's how innovation spreads.
Mm-hmm. One question here is specifically on Facebook and blogs. Someone asked, because you covered a fair amount of channels, Twitter and such, but any examples from your book or just in your experience around the use of Facebooks and blogs that help the empowered customer interact with a company and, of course, vice versa?
Well, I will say that, just setting up a fan page or a like button by itself doesn't really accomplish very much. One example I saw that was actually very effective has to do with Head & Shoulders for men. So Head & Shoulders is a Procter & Gamble product, and they recognized that they had to have a different approach for men, and centered this around Troy Polamalu, the football player who has that luxurious mane of hair. And so they created a page in which men who like Troy Polamalu and Head & Shoulders can actually sign up and get information from the company. And because of the fact that this was connected with this popular football player, it was more successful. I think that when I see brand pages that succeed, a person who's a fan on that brand page, if they post a question or have a problem or whatever, they're actually going to get a response from some spokesperson for the company. For certain brands like IKEA or Harley-Davidson that have a whole lot of people that are fans of theirs, this can actually be very effective to bring them together in one place.
Mm-hmm. I've got two questions, and I'm going to hand it over to Jennifer. Any guidance on budget allocation? Again, maybe some ownership around budget. Where would a team start if they really wanted to invest in a Heroes program?
Well, I don't know if there is such a thing as a Heroes program. There are different elements of this that have different budgets. Like I said, one of the main things to do is to support somebody's activity, and these social media marketing activities can cost anything from, really cheap, like setting up and running a Twitter account that somebody might be one part-time employee and might end up costing less than $10,000 or $15,000 a year, all the way up to some of these programs which are supported by advertising that might actually end up costing $750,000. And you just need to look not only at what it's going to cost to create this thing, because often the tools are very cheap, but what is the human resource that's needed to monitor it and manage it, and also how are we going to measure the success so that we can prove that the $25,000 we've put into this is worth it. Now, as far as the Heroes program, that one thing that people do that does cost them money is to put in place collaboration and innovation systems. So things like Imaginatic that I talked about at Chubb, some people use SharePoint, at BBVA, the Spanish bank, they had an internal blogosphere. These things tend to cost in the tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to set up. But because they connect and generate innovation from an entire employee base, they can be a very effective way to get that innovation to actually get out there where customers can experience it.
Yeah, I think collaboration in general, with any kind of an intranet or portal, platform is going to be highly useful, especially with a distributed organization. And the final question for you is, what additional resources can you recommend besides the book that would help Heroes with strategy, with tools, implementation, anything else that is online that's accessible?
Well, I think people are probably going to be well served by following the blogs of some of the top people in this space, people like Jeremiah Aoyang and and Brian Solis, for example, that are talking about it on a regular basis. And as far as other resources, one thing that can't be overlooked is the vendors. So people like Sitecore, people like Imaginatic themselves, you know, there are a lot of companies in this space that are building everything from systems you can use to monitor social media activity to communities that you can roll out, like Jive and Lithium, for example. In many cases, these vendors have got people who can actually help you to justify this. And, of course, since they expect to get business from you, there's a high degree of likelihood that they want to help you and be your friend. And so if you're looking for free advice and sources of information, that's certainly a worthwhile thing to do. Now, obviously, we do that at Forrester Research, and we have people here who are happy to help folks, but there are a lot of other alternatives out there, and the vendors can't be overlooked as a potential source.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Josh, I want to thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. We are out of time in terms of questions, and I'm going to go ahead and hand it off to Jennifer at AMA, and thank everyone for participating.
Yes, thank you for a great informative webcast, Eric and Josh. And as a reminder to all our attendees, you will receive an email that will contain a link to the recording of this presentation and links to additional resources. And to view an archive of this session, you can always visit our site at marketingpower.com/webcast. Also, if you'd like to continue the discussion on Twitter, search for and add the hashtag SiteCoreHeroes. I'd like to thank Sitecore, our generous sponsor, and ReadyTalk, who provided us with the web conferencing platform for today's webcast. If you'd like to learn more about ReadyTalk and their services, please visit readytalk.com/AMA. Last but not least, I'd like to thank our audience for your participation and want to remind you to join the AMA Weekly for our Thought Leader webcast. That does end our presentation for today. Thank you for joining us.